Pseudopod, episode 194, May 14th, 2010. This week's story, Crawl, by Lee Thompson. Hello, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast. I, as ever, am Alistair, and this week's story comes to us from Lee Thompson, a submissions editor with Dark Recesses Press and the Stoker-nominated Horror Library anthology series. Lee has had stories in Morpheus Tales magazine as well, and this story placed third in the Dark Discovery short story contest. You can find him at alongthispathsodarkly.blogspot.com, which will soon feature interviews with editors, writers and publishers, as well as updates on sales and snippets of work in progress. He likes people. Stop in and tell him hello. Ask how the troll army he's training is doing as well. Then come back and tell us. We asked Lee what inspired Krull, and after he stopped demanding to know how we got his phone number, he told us, "Krull grew out of my fear of not really knowing those we love, and how much they sometimes seem to change when we're apart for a while. Also, how our initial perceptions of a situation thrust upon us can sometimes be so off. I've always liked and sympathised with the young teen who is trying to process all the weird things within their own family structure and the world around them, all while trying to fix their own identity. And it's about choices, whether good or bad, because I believe that's what guides the course of our lives." Your narrator this week is one of our own, the mighty Dave Thompson of Podcastle, so pay close attention, keep your machete sharp, and be ready to do what you have to do. Because I have a story for you, and however much you may want to deny it, deep down, you know it's true.
Crawl, by Lee Thompson. Jim grinned. "If we cut his legs off, how far do you think he can crawl before he dies?" "Sometimes, soldiers come back from war full of demons, like my older brother Jim." He slapped my shoulder, grinning, his eyes shiny as the dark still water in Sullivan County's gravel pit. I took a step back, sent stones rolling, and rubbed my arm. Sunlight soaked through the high trees at the edge of the property. Jim looked at Robert on the ground. I didn't want to. Didn't want to look at Jim either. But sometimes we do what we least want anyway. God knows why. Jim grinned. "What do you think, Gabe?" "I don't know." Robert tried to bite through his gag, but his teeth weren't sharp enough. Sweat stood out on his forehead, all oily-like. He rolled back and forth in dead leaves and limestone rock, trying to get his feet under him. But Jim had tied his hands behind his back and ran that rope to Robert's right ankle. So even if he managed to get up, he'd have to try and hop away on one leg. "Stay down, man," I thought. "Look at this guy," Jim pointed. Robert worked his knees under him, chin in the rocks, looking like some type of human tripod. Jim snatched a rock the size of a cue ball and molested it with long fingers. He was a man now. He hadn't been one when he left. Least, that's what Dad said. I cleared my throat. "Mom's gonna wonder where I'm at." Jim spat on the rock. "It makes your pitch faster." He whipped it. The rock bounced off the back of Robert's head and he crumpled. I winced. Blood spurted from his chin as he rolled onto his side, his hair all greasy shine, the shadow seeming to turn the red to black as it dripped along the collar of his shirt. "Mom won't care." He strode to his old Ford pickup and grabbed the machete from the box and sat on the tailgate. "This monster needs to give me some answers. Bad thing is, there's more of them out there. I can feel it. You can't kill them all." "What has he done, Jim?" I thought. "What can a man do that deserves this kind of punishment?" "We should let him go." Birds chirped. Then the forest went still. A loose rock fell free of the quarry's inside wall and plopped in the water. "For real, we're going to get in trouble." And I thought, "And I don't want you to do this." Jim unsheathed the machete and pointed the blade at me. "No, Robert the Dillweed here is the one in trouble. Now sit down until I think things through. Rash decisions are what get you caught." "They teach you that over there in the desert," I thought. He seemed so different than before he'd left. Made you wonder what good serving your country did if it only destroyed what decency you had left. They don't all come back like him, but at the time it felt like it. "Don't go near him, Gabe." "I'm not." Robert grunted and rolled onto his back. Jim jumped off the tailgate, his eyes flat. His lips trembled and he muttered thick, "Mom." He walked with a lean forward, machete dangling from his right hand. Robert pissed his pants, a puddle spreading in the light gray stones beneath him. I knelt down, watching Jim, My mind blank at that moment as I picked up a stone, felt hard reality slipping in. Whatever it was Robert did, torturing him didn't seem like the right answer. I hollered at Jim, called his name. He didn't turn. His voice a low mumble, saying something to Robert who cowered, all bound up by rope and gag and fear. Jim lifted the machete. I threw the rock. It thudded against the high right side of Jim's back. He spun, his face twisted by pain and surprise. The blade raised out away from him, his eyes wet. Pick up another rock, you dumb shit, I thought. But I couldn't bend down. Jim ran towards me, eyes glassy, veins sticking out on his arms. I put my hands up and for a split second imagined him swinging the machete. Saw my fingers lying on the ground, red and tan and no longer part of me. Jim grabbed my left wrist and jerked me toward the cliff over Gravel Pit's lagoon. I tried to jerk away, but his hand closed tighter, and he swore. Don't, Jim, I can't swim. He pushed me down at the high wall's lip, and pebbles plucked in the water 30 feet below. I started praying that our dad would pull in, but he was working, and he had no idea where we were. I hadn't seen my mom in a couple days because she left a note saying she had to get away for a while. My dad cried at night, in his sleep, and I'd sit outside his door and whisper, "She's probably at Aunt Millie's. She'll be back. She's not going to leave us." Jim stomped the ground. "That hurt, Gabe. What the hell you attack me for?" The whole summer's pain coiled around inside me. My parents' problem, my buddy Gary moving away, Jim coming back to Forksville not the same person. I cried, curled into a ball, waiting for my brother to stab me, hack away the parts he found unacceptable. He touched my shoulder, the way our father did, like he could heal a person through the tips of his fingers. "Look at me, Gabe." I kept my eyes closed, heard his feet twist in the rocks farther out, the sound of Robert sobbing through his gag. "Gabe, what did he do that's so bad?" "Who?" He pulled his hand away and I met his eyes. The machete lay on the ground next to him. "Robert?" His eyes hardened again, and I hated seeing him transform like that. "You don't want to know, okay? Trust me. You've got enough problems." "How can anything he did affect me? He's..." "It would. Trust me. Now get up. I'll take you home." "What about him?" I sat up and Jim's hand shot out like a snake and grabbed my wrist. He pulled me to my feet and dusted off my back. I stared at the machete, my head down, afraid of his answer, afraid to look over at Robert. Jim dusted his hands on his pants and picked up the blade. "Don't worry about him. Now come on." He walked to his truck and opened the passenger door. I looked down behind me at the water. Dad sat in his recliner holding half a bottle of Bud Light. A ring of wetness marked his knee. He looked up as Jim brought him another beer, set it on the coffee table and said, "You need anything else, Pops?" Dad looked past Jim and studied my face for a moment. His lips moved, but no words formed. He looked older than he had a week ago. Dark bags beneath his eyes, hair bust, and red tie tossed over his shoulder. His hand shivered. Dad looked at the picture of our family on the mantle. It made me want to hug him, but Jim was between us, and I didn't want my brother to think I was weak. And it might have been the wrong impulse anyway, or Jim would have done it himself. Jim patted Dad's knee and stood. "I'm dirty. I'm going to run and take a shower. Holler if you need anything." Dad grunted as Jim walked away. He looked at me again, eyes like a dead fish. "You want to sit a spell with me?" I nodded and sat on the sofa to his left. "Something wrong, Gabriel?" "Lots of things," I thought. "I'm fine. How are you?" He smiled and frowned all at the same time and looked like he wanted to cry. "You boys grow up so fast. I don't know where the time goes." "Me neither. Do you think..." He looked at the door of the hall as the spray of the water sounded from the shower. Jim started singing "It Came Out of the Sky" in a not half-bad impersonation of John Fogerty. Dad seemed to deflate. "I hope your mother comes back soon." "Me too, but I thought, you think she won't, huh?" "You're always so agreeable. You just telling me what I want to hear, or do you mean that?" It felt like we were broaching something serious, but I didn't know what he was scratching at. "No, I hope she comes back is all, just like you."
"You're a lot like me."
"And Jim's like Mom," Dad chuckled.
"That he is." He swigged his beer and relaxed back into his chair. "You two have fun today?"
My skin went all clammy. I rubbed my hands together and held them in my lap to keep them still. Did you?
No. I refuse to do what a salesman has to do. I hate my job sometimes.
Don't people like it that you tell them the truth, though? He leaned forward and sat his beer on the coffee table and picked up the one Jim had brought him. Dad wiped the condensation on his pant leg and looked me in the eye. The boss doesn't like it, and truth doesn't pay the bills.
So it'd be better to lie and tell them? No, you're not listening.
I'm confused.
Shit, Gabe, so am I. I'd make more money if I lied to people and rushed them out the door with my word that they were driving away the car that was right for them.
Do you want me to leave you alone?
You never answered my question.
My feet shifted. Jim shut the shower off and whistled.
About today?
Yeah, Gabe. Did it go okay? You seem a bit shaken. Quiet, too. More than normal, anyway.
We stood at the edge of a dark abyss. I knew that if I told him what Jim had done, that there was a man I barely knew, but who probably didn't deserve what had happened to him, laying out in the woods with the bugs and dust and stars, Jim wouldn't like it. And there was a part of me that still didn't want to disappoint him. There's always been a part of me that worshipped him for his raw force, as the other part of me admired my father's sweet, honest nature. I leaned back and ran my hands down the legs of my pants. I guess it's just Mom being gone. Tears burned my eyes. My temples pounded because it was partly the truth. I did miss her. The house seemed so quiet, so unlike home. She used to sing as she cleaned and cooked and kept everything tidy. Jim stepped into the living room. He grinned at me. My brother knew I'd kept his secret, and I felt a little pride blossoming in my chest, alongside my fear for Robert's safety. Dad looked back and forth between us. It's easy to forget that your old man was a boy once. He'd done things you'd done, maybe crazier stuff, but you'd never heard it, because they tucked their youth away and shouldered what they thought the world and their families expected from them. Jim waved at the front door and said, "Come on, Gabe, let Dad relax."
"Where are we going?"
"I don't want to go back to the gravel pit," I thought. My brother headed for the door. Dad said, "Go on, son, he's missed you. Just want some of your time. In the end, that's all you can give a person. Go on. I'll be okay." But he didn't look okay. He looked like the tire on my bike, worn, about to spring a leak. I stood. Part of me hoped that Jim would run me over to Aunt Millie's so we could see if Mom was there. But men's ways aren't a boy's ways. Jim had something else in mind entirely. He already knew where Mom was. We pulled into the gas station. Jim bought 5 gallons of gas and smiled at me like I was in for a treat. After he jumped back in the truck, he threw her in gear and tore off down sidetrack road, the struts humming, dust flying, and a cloud behind us.
"Where are we going?"
"You already know. Why you asking?" The road ended at a field surrounded by dark woods. A dilapidated shack sat at the back of the property, and it brought back memories of when we were younger and growing up in a mobile home, before the family moved and Dad let the land rot. The trailer wasn't there anymore because he'd sold it. The shack always crept me out, the tunnel underneath it even more. Jim parked up next to the door.
"You got me thinking."
"How's that?"
"You wanted to know why Robert deserved what I was dishing out, right? Well, I'll show you. If you wet your pants, don't bitch."
"I'm not going to wet my pants."
We got out. The wind bent waist-high weeds.
"Why do you..."
"Yeah, you grab it. The can, there. Don't look stupid, just do it."
I grabbed the can, but couldn't lift it over the side. I dropped the tailgate and slid it off the back.
"You want me to take it in there?"
Jim opened the door. Its hinges moaned, and he licked his lips and nodded. Holding the handle with both hands and trying not to tip over, I managed to take it into the dark interior. Looking back now, it reminds me of people. How things can be all sunny and calm outside. It smells so horrible. It feels so horrible inside. Jim closed the door and we stood in the dark.
"Didn't you bring a flashlight?"
"Hold on a second, Gabe."
He sighed and pulled the trap door up, and green light spilled out from the hole in the earth.
"Bring me that can."
"What is that?"
"You'll see in a minute."
Green pulsed and throbbed off the walls. It lit Jim's face, and his eyes looked blacker than the hearse that carried our granddaddy to sleep the big sleep at All Saints Cemetery. My brother laughed, but it choked out on him, the lines deepening around his mouth. This is some serious shit, Gabe. Once you know what's going on, nothing is ever going to be the same. I wanted to say, I believe you, Jimmy, but I couldn't find my voice. My knees shook and my bladder weighed a ton. On my hands and knees, I scuttled closer to the mouth of the pit. Jim carried the can of gasoline down and I climbed the wooden ladder after him, covered in sweat, trying to wipe away the dust clinging to my eyes with my shoulder. Creatures crawled in slow circles and left puddles of neon green jelly behind. They hummed, the pitch rising. I covered my ears. Jesus, Jim? They're not Jesus. What are they? Why are they screaming? Step closer. I looked back against the ladder, shook my head. Jim set the gas can down and looked off into the chasm to our left. The floor declined and ended in blackness, but on the lip, lit by green, our mother lay bound. I made a break for her and Jim's arm came up, hit me in the chest. It knocked the wind out of me and I gagged for a breath. Don't go near her. He's gonna feed her to these things. I wanted to be wrong, be my father, do what was right, save my mother, but Jim would overpower me. I sat in a wet puddle and Jim wrinkled his nose and shook his head. One of the creatures widened its circle and crawled past my right knee. It had 1,000 little hairs topped with eyes watching me. What are they? Crawlers. Hell, I don't know. Are they aliens? No, not them. I think they're something of the deeper dark, the places people don't go. I looked up some weird shit. Some of the coal miners reported seeing them over 100 years ago. People thought they were crazy, oxygen deficiency because the shafts weren't all that well ventilated. Why is Mom down here, Jim? Why'd you tie her up? I told you, things would never be the same. I sobbed and couldn't stop. Jim knelt next to me and ran his hands through my hair. I know this is tough, but just wait and you'll see.
I don't want to see.
We sat in throbbing green as the things crawled and whispered something that almost sounded human, like babies' cries. They're hungry, and you're giving them a sacrifice. Why, Jim? Why, Mom? I thought. The things moved toward her, doing their crawling crescents. I pushed myself up, and Jim pulled a lighter, pulled the cap off the gas can. Don't move, Gabe. Watch. I hit him in the right eye. His head snapped back, and I jumped by him, ran for Mom. The crawler brushed against her shoulder, and she stirred. Her eyes went wide, and her mouth opened. And kept opening. The sound of a heavy gale filled the hollow. It tore at my clothes and the crawler skidded across the earth, squealing like a pig. Mom's mouth held a chasm that I could stick my head in. She kept inhaling and the crawler brushed her lips, and her skin rippled as she sank her teeth into it and sucked. The neon faded. The cavern grew a little darker. The crawler stilled. Jim, I trembled. You have to bind them up when they're sleeping. She woke before I could get a gag on her like I did Robert. He moved next to me, held out the gas can. Take it. Mom? She's not our mom. I don't know what she is, but she's not Mom.
How did you find these things? How did you...
I came down here to think when we were younger. It's quiet. After the war, I came back, but she was down here. She ate one. So did her lover.
Lover?
Jim nodded. Mom writhed on the ground, her tongue lolling out, licking the slime from her lips. She moaned, like a girl in one of those bad movies. No, Jim. Jim shook the gas can, tapped a Zippo against my forehead. It's real, like some kind of succubus. Where's our mom? I think it ate her. My heart hardened and felt like it crumbled.
Her lover.
Robert?
Yep, and I think he was planning on taking Dad's place.
Why? I don't know, Gabe, but this thing took our mother. Burn it. She looked normal again, exhausted. I waited for her to sing like she did at home, but she didn't, and I started tumbling inside.
I can't.
You can. You want them to take Dad?
I...
Dad, Gabe. The gas can's weight pulled at my shoulder.
I doused the thing that looked like our mom, and the hole in the ground stank of fumes. Jim pointed at the ladder. Climb up. What about you? I'm coming. I climbed the ladder, my head heavy, my pulse tapped against the skin of my neck, sweat dripping in my eyes. Up top, I peeked down through the trapdoor's hole. Jim knelt in front of her. He whispered something and stuck his arm out. Her head shot forward, and that giant mouth closed over his arm, up to the elbow. Jim screamed. He beat at his arm with his left hand, but she started sucking and dragged the man up to the shoulder. Run, Gabe! Jim flicked his lighter. The hole exploded with heat and light and knocked me back, filled the room with a stench of burnt air. It hurt to open my eyes. The shack seemed quieter than death until I whispered, Jim? I crawled forward. Smoke billowed out of the hole. Jim? After lying there awake, drenched in a sickness so cold it plastered my clothes to my thin frame, I forced myself up. The last of the day's light glared off his truck's windshield. I wiped my tears and cried out the tender flesh of my eyelids. Jim did this to show you that the things masquerading as robber will take Dad, I thought. They'll eat those things that crawl and spend their lives running circles. With a machete-riding shotgun, I ground the gears in his old Ford, driving the long, dark road to the gravel pit.
You notice different things out at the edges. Small towns and villages function differently anyway, and often turn inwards and become insular, focusing on the little wars and little romances that mean nothing to anyone else, but everything to the people involved. The interesting thing about this insularity, though, is what happens if you don't share it, if you pay attention to the world around you, to the things that are happening but that everyone else doesn't want to talk about, or just doesn't see. That's when the fun starts. And the word fun in this instance doesn't necessarily mean things you enjoy. I have friends who have found themselves caught between the Isle of Man's nascent drug trade and the police. I have friends who bounced off the island's gang culture. Yes, it did have one. And I had one friend who was asked, in full view of about 40 other people in a busy pub, whether he'd be interested in joining the Manx Fight Club. Stop and think about that for a moment. I lived on a rock in the middle of bloody nowhere where the closest thing to a drug trade was a locker in my school with amphetamines inside, where tiny gangs in tiny towns had tiny, slightly embarrassed rocks with other tiny gangs in other tiny towns, and somehow they had a fight club, which they invited complete strangers to. Like I say, things work differently out at the edges. Me? I noticed the really odd stuff. There was one incident in particular that always stood out, and that I've been thinking a lot about recently, especially in light of this story. My primary school was about a mile away from one of the local churches, and you could see the graveyard from the top of the football field, which also happened to be where I spent a lot of time reading. Because me playing football? Not a good plan for anyone, at least of all me. Anyway, I remember there was a road that ran behind the graveyard and ended in this classic, stereotypical 5-bar farm gate. One day, I watched a man walk up to that gate, wearing a really rather odd pointed hat. He looked around for a good minute or so, standing quite still. During this time, I had time to notice he had no legs from the knees down. And he turned and walked back into the woods, and the wind reversed and blew straight into my face for 3 full seconds. Never saw him again. There were other things. The woman in my house, who was clearly not my mother or my sister, who said hello to me one night as I was going to sleep. The sound of the toilet being flushed when no one else was in the house. All united by the same thing. The sensation that I lived a little closer to the edge of the film strip than most people, and for a few seconds, my Yosemite Sam off the side. The different things. The odd things. The places where you can see the stitches in reality. I love those places, and judging by this story lead us to. Just don't spend too much time there. Otherwise you might find yourself having to listen to your older brother a little too closely. But hey, if you do find the truth beneath the world, you could always write a flash piece about it. Our flash contest runs to the end of this month, after which Escape Pods launches, so if you fancy it, here are the details. You can send 2 stories to us and 2 to Escape Pod, and they must be up to 500 words each. Paste them into an email, send that email to eaflash@gmail.com, and then our moderators will strip the names and addresses and post them on a locked section of our forum, where they can be voted on. Yes, to read and vote, you will have to sign up to our forum, which is at forum.escapeartists.net. It's actually the easiest way for us to handle all this, and it's also the best way to make sure the stories remain unpublished. Unless, of course, you win. in which case glory awaits. So, those deadlines in full. Our contest will run until May the 31st. Judging will then, and voting will then begin June 1st, which will run until the last round is over. The Escape Pod contest will open on June the 1st and close on June 30th. Then, judging and voting will run from July 1st until the final round is over for that. Whereas our competition with the financial system never ends. If you liked this story, please go to pseudopod.org and click on Feed the Pod. I promise you each cent is used to help our authors construct intricately designed machines of terror that somewhere in the world will stick in someone's head like the thorns of a rose. Or pay server costs, whichever. Pseudopod is a production of Escape Artists Incorporated and is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives license. And Pseudopod knows that that's just the way the story goes.